Okay, so CC 101, Covenant Community 101, Discovering Your Identity Part 4. Discovering Your Identity Part 4. I want to start with a quick review of what we've just been covering, of recent covering, not going all the way to the beginning of this series, but recently. What we did last time was we covered the promises made to Avram, and his name then being changed to Avraham, so the promises made to him. Okay, and I'm going to kind of go through them reasonably quickly here. First, Avram was told to go out, and I shall make you a great nation. And in the idea of going out came the idea of trusting Yahweh and doing what he says. He says, trust me and do what I say. Go out, and I shall make you a great nation. He said, I will bless you and make your name or your reputation great. And we can see that that certainly has happened over the time between then and now. He said, I shall bless those who bless you and curse him who curses you. In you, all the clans of the earth shall be blessed. And then he said, to your descendants, to your seed, I give this land. So he showed him land, and he said, I give this to your seed. For all the land I shall give to you and your seed is going to be a forever promise. That's a giving, a covenanting to the children and his seed, the descendants, forever. He was told that the seed would be as the dust of the earth, so his descendants would be as the dust of the earth. He was told that his reward was exceedingly great, and we talked about why that was, and it was because he trusted and did what Yahweh had said to do. So we appreciate, then we can see that it was an obedience thing that got him a reward. Reward is connected to what you do. This has nothing to do with salvation, which is not something you earn, but you earn rewards. And so he said, your reward, which you get for doing something, will be exceedingly great. So what did he do? And we saw that he did quite a lot of things, and we'll talk about them in a minute. We also learned a little bit about the significance of being an heir. So that was introduced to us a little bit, that there's this thing, idea like you're heirs, okay? And that's where we deal with inheritance. Then we were told that the seed or descendants would be as the stars of the heavens. And then he said, I give my covenant between me and you and shall greatly increase you. So then the word covenanting was brought into this. So we have these promises. And then we were given a promise of I shall establish my covenant. So he didn't just say, I give my covenant between me and you. He says, I shall establish my covenant between me and you and your seed. So he gave the covenant to Abraham, but he said, I'm going to establish it between me and you and your seed after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be Elohim to you and your seed after you. Now, by the way, this is a unilateral promise. He says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the Elohim of you and your descendants. They don't have to do anything for that to be true. However, what they do will affect their reward and will affect our relationship, but it will not change the fact that I am going to be their Elohim. And so I'm going to be mindful of them and aware of what they're doing and intervening and guiding with that, you know, not so invisible hand sometimes. Then we have an admonition or two. He admonished Abram and said, I am El Shaddai, the Almighty. He says, walk before me. So we talked about that idea, what it meant to walk before me, to walk in front of his face or walk where I can see what you're doing. Okay. He talech lifnei. Then we have another admonition about walking before him and being perfect from the Hebrew word tamim, which we learned meant honest, simple, innocent, complete, upright and honorable, filled with integrity. So he says, walk before me, filled in this way, in an honest, simple, innocent, complete, upright, honorable, and integrous way. We have another admonition. He says, as for you, guard my covenant, you and your seed after you. So we're told now that he is to guard. Now he's saying, you guys need to guard this covenant, watch over it, and be aware of it. Now, in this case, he hadn't given them that much to do yet, except he said, you're going to obey what I say. You're going to follow, trust, and believe in what I'm telling you to do. And you're going to guard, remember, watch over the fact that you're aware that there's a covenant. At this point, it's the awareness that's most important. But that covenanting comes from the trust me and do what I say, which is at the very beginning. Then we have an admonition that the covenant is connected to circumcision of the flesh, which later we will also learn has to do with circumcision of the heart. And then we talked briefly about the fact that it's always been a requirement to do both. And then we came to understand the phrase, and this is one that really was important that we dealt with real quickly here, was the he meaning Abraham, believed in Yahweh, and Yahweh reckoned it to him, Abraham, for righteousness. And we went through understanding that, well, up to this point, what did he do? He believed, and he left his home like he was instructed in Genesis 12:1. He gave tithe to Melchizedek, the priest of the Most High. He kept his vow to the Most High. We see that in Genesis 14, where he mentions that he had a vow of not taking anything from the spoils when he retrieved Lot from the kings. And so we know that we then looked at Hebrews chapter 11, where we see that by belief, Abraham did this, this, and this, including the offering of Isaac. We saw by belief, Noah built an ark. By belief, all these people did things. They made three-dimensional actions, visibility of their beliefs in the three-dimensional world by doing something. And so we see that when it says in that verse, he believed in Yahweh and Yahweh reckoned it to Abram for righteousness, it's not just because it was an intellectual, emotional, or spiritual concept. There was action behind it. He had demonstrated his belief. Okay, so that's our quick overview. And now we're going to take a look at how these promises are then transferred from Abram. Remember, this was covenanting that was for him and his descendants after him. And we're going to watch this now, the promises as they get passed to Yitzchak and then to Yaakov. So we're going to go to Genesis, Bereishit, Genesis chapter 22, and we're going to begin in verse 15. Because after all, we just read a whole lot of promises, and we're going to see those now transfer as they get passed down. Because after all, we are now a few millennia past this happening, and we're looking at how these promises apply to us. Because we see reference to those things in the Brit Chadashah, the Renewed Covenant. So let's watch the passing of these promises down. Genesis 22, 15. And the messenger of Yahweh called to Abraham a second time from the heavens and said, by myself I have sworn, declares Yahweh, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, that I shall certainly bless you, and I shall certainly increase your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is in the seashore. And let your seed possess the gates of their enemies, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. You see the connection consistently there. There's the connection consistently there. So this is right after the offering of Isaac. And so what we see here is Isaac is being offered. The promises are being reaffirmed, and they're being reaffirmed, he says, because what? Because you obeyed. You obeyed my voice. And that's a very important component of all of this. He says, because you have obeyed my voice. And so there's a section of three or four parts of the Do You Know the Father and the Son where we go into My Sheep Know My Voice. And so you may want to go back and review that. I believe it starts in like part 6 of that teaching. And there's three or four parts that go into the My Sheep Know My Voice. So this voice thing is really important. So we see now that these promises are being reaffirmed after the offering of Isaac. And then we're going to see in chapter 24. Let's go to chapter 24 and verse 59. Now this is Rivka. Okay, and Rivka, who's going to be the bride of Yitzchak, Rivka, her family members pray a blessing. Now, of course, this is not the same thing as Yahweh giving blessings to Avram, but it's interesting how these things match up with what we've been talking about. In chapter 24, 59, it says, so they let go Rivka, their sister, and her nurse, and Avram's servant, and his men, and they blessed Rivka and said to her, let our sister become the mother of thousands of 10,000s, and let your seed possess the gates of those who hate them. And so there's this kind of a linkage of a promise to Rivka that matches the promise made to Avram, that she would be the mother of thousands of 10,000s, and the idea of possessing the gates of the enemies, which we read in chapter 22. So now we get to chapter 26, and we're going to see the promises passed forward. In chapter 26, and in verse 1, there was a scarcity of food in the land, besides the first scarcity of food, which was in the days of Abraham. And Yitzchak went to Avimelech, sovereign of the Philistines in Gerar, and Yahweh appeared to him and said, do not go down to Mitzrayim, live in the land which I command you. Sojourn in this land, and I shall be with you and bless you. For I give, now notice that there's a connection just like it was with Abraham. He's telling him where to go. Isn't that what we saw starting out with Abraham? He told him to go and where to dwell. And he's saying, sojourn, he says, and if you do what I tell you, again, if you trust me and obey and do what I say, I will bless you, I will be with you, and I will bless you, and I will give these lands to you and your seed, and I shall establish the oath which I swore to Abraham your father with you. He says, and I shall increase your seed like the stars of the heaven, and I shall give all these lands to your seed, and in your seed all the goyim, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So we see some of the things worded that were worded in the blessings to Abram are now connected back here or forward linked to Yitzhak. But notice the reasoning again is now going to be in verse 5. Why is this going to Yitzhak? Is it because Yitzhak did anything so wonderful necessarily? No. He says, because Abraham obeyed my voice and guarded my charge, my commands, my laws, and my Torah-tai. I know the scripture says Torot, which is a plural for Torah, but the right word in the Hebrew there means my, it's a possessive, it's Torah-tai. But notice that the word Torah is here in Genesis chapter 26 and verse 5. This is before Moshe. We are not into Exodus yet. We've got lots of generations to get to before Moshe. And yet here, it says that Abraham obeyed the Torah. And so we have laws, right, rulings, statutes. There's lots of words for the different things that, you know, Yahweh instructs. Ordinances, right, rulings, laws, commandments, mitzvot. And so here he says, he kept my instructions. In other words, whatever I instructed him to do, he did. He kept my Torah. So here we're seeing that there's a connection between passing the promises forward to because of the obedience and the listening and the heeding of a voice. The voice specifically of Yahweh, his Elohim. And so this is really important, that obedience is connected to these blessings and promises. Now there's an expectation that Yitzhak will do the same thing. He says, don't go here, go there, do what I say, guard my covenant, and I'm going to establish my oath with you. Now I'm establishing it with you because of what your father did, and now we're going to see what you do. And then we're going to see that that then passes us forward then to Yaakov. And so let's continue. And by the way, just so you know, and we're not going to go there because I don't want to get into the whole confusion. We're trying to explain everything from Galatians. But in Galatians 4:28, it says, as Yitzchak was, we also are children of promise. Now we're going to connect those dots a lot more when we come full circle back to the New Testament. Remember, we started in the Brit Hadashah in the New Testament. Saw all these things that made us go, and now we're going back to the beginning to kind of see how that all originated. Where did this all come from that is being referenced in the New so that we can understand what they were talking about, because they were talking about and referring to something that they understood because they understood what had already happened and what was already said and promised. And so here we see that when Shaul is writing in Galatians, he's making a connection that there's a connection between those he's talking to and the promises that were made to Yitzchak. He says, we as Yitzchak was are children of the promise, children of promise. Let's go to Genesis chapter 28, Genesis chapter 28 and verse 1. And Yitzchak called Yaakov and blessed him and commanded him and said to him, do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise and go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take a wife for yourself from there, from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So we see this constant connection back to the idea of the Aramean, going back to Paddan Aram. We saw that with the finding of the wife for Isaac, and now we're going to see it, the same thing for Yaakov. He says, and El Shaddai bless you and make you bear fruit and increase you, and you should become an assembly of peoples and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your seed with you so that you inherit the land of your sojournings which Elohim gave to Abraham. So we start to see this blessing and these promises being passed on to Yaakov, but we also have this interesting thing that was mentioned here that wasn't mentioned before was this idea of being an assembly of peoples. Okay, in the Hebrew, that is kahal. We also have a version of the word kahal, which is called kehilat, okay, or an assembly. A kahal is an assemblage. And so he's saying you're going to be a kehilat, an assembly, a body, a congregation. I mean, sometimes they call it, they refer to the assembly or the congregation in the wilderness. The word there is the kahal or the kehilat. And he's saying that you're going to be an assembly of peoples. In other words, there's going to be this mixed multitude that will be connected with you at some point. It's going to be an assembly of peoples who are assembled together for a like purpose. Because generally when people assemble together, it's because they have a common purpose or reason to be together. He says, so you're going to be an assembly of peoples. Now drop down to verse 10. And Yaakov went out from Beersheba, and he went towards Haran, and he came upon a place and stopped overnight. So we're still in chapter 28. He stopped for the night, for the sun had set, and he took one of the stones out of that place, and he put it at his head, and he lay down in the place to sleep. And he dreamed and saw a ladder set upon the earth, and at its top reached to the heavens. And he saw messengers of Elohim going up and coming down on it. And see, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh, Elohim of Abraham your father, and Elohim of Yitzhak, the land in which you are lying, I give it to you and your seed. So here he is, and we're not going to focus so much on the ladder. That's a whole nother teaching. But here he is now. Yahweh is doing what? He's reaffirming or affirming the transferring of the blessings that were given to his forefathers are now being transferred to him. We're talking about land inheritance. He says, and the fact that, well, watch how this plays out. He says, the land on which you're lying, I give it to you and your seed. Your seed shall be like the dust of the earth, and shall break forth from the west to the east, to the north and to the south. And all the clans of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your seed. Doesn't that sound very similar to what was said to Avram? And then it was said to Yitzchak. Because Avram and Yitzchak had that promise. But we have this idea here in verse 14 of breaking forth. We also have the idea here of being scattered and regathered is brought out here. We haven't really been introduced to that before, this idea of being scattered and gathered, because we're going to see this, he says in verse 15, and we'll get into this breaking forth thing in a second, and see, I am with you and shall guard you wherever you go and shall bring you back to this land. There's your scattering and regathering, for I am not going to leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Now, so we have this idea of breaking forth. The word translated break forth in Hebrew is paratz. Paratz, which has a sense of being exploded out, dispersed and scattered. He said, it's like going to be an explosion how this, your seeds is going to go everywhere and scatter and be dispersed everywhere. And we're going to see this play out over and over and over again through the prophets when we start to get to the prophets after we finish through the first five books here, and we see what happened here with these promises, we're going to see what the prophets had to say about it, and we're going to see that they also prophesied about this paratz, this dispersing everywhere. And then what we also see happen here in verse 15, he says, I'm not going to leave you until I have done what I've spoken to you. Now, what has he said? You're going to be a blessing. You're going to be assembly of nations. You're going to be gathered. You're going to be all of these things. Your seed like the dust of the earth. I mean, he said, I'm not going to leave you. Now, understand what he's trying to say here is, you may leave me. You may run off and do all kinds of things where you're then going to be dispersed and scattered. I will never leave you. I will always be aware. I'll always be there. You can always return to me. He says, and I will regather you. He says, wherever you go, and I shall bring you back to this land. Now he's sitting here saying, look, this land I'm giving to you. And isn't it interesting how in all cases you're going to see this. You'll see this even with Moses, who's about to let them go into across the Jordan. We'll see Moses, maybe not in this teaching, but you see Moses saying, and when you screw this all up, they're about to just basically barely get started. He says, and when you screw this all up, and you will, and then you get scattered everywhere, you will get brought back. And so there's this understanding of the end from the beginning. Abba's telling him right up front, look, I'm giving you this land, and you are going to break forth to the west and the east, the north and the south, and that kind of covers the whole world. He says, but I am going to bring you back, and I'm not going to leave you till I've done what I've spoken to you. Let's continue now in chapter 35. Okay, chapter 35. We'll read in verse 9. And Elohim appeared to Yaakov again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him. And Elohim said to him, your name is Yaakov. Your name is no longer called Yaakov, but Yisrael is your name. So he called his name Yisrael. And Elohim said to him, I am El Shaddai. Bear fruit and increase. A nation and a company of nations shall be from you, and sovereigns come from your body. And the land which I gave to Avram and Yitzchak I give to you, and to your seed after you I give this land. Okay, so we see here Yaakov reaffirmed his Israel. Okay, this was first given to him in chapter 32 when he wrestled with the messenger. And now this is being reaffirmed by Yahweh that his name was now going to be Yisrael, one who prevailed with men and prevailed with Elohim. And so he's saying, look, again, I'm going to reaffirm these promises. And in the process of reaffirming the promises, I'm going to give you a little bit more detail. So we had the detail added of the parats. Now we're getting the detail added about this thing, understanding of a nation and a company of nations. Does he have any idea at this point what that's going to look like? No. If you're reading along the story, you don't either. But we should, because we know the whole story, understand that this is an early hint at the two houses. I know people get all upset about two-house teaching is this and two-house teaching. Remember, I told you, we're going to tell you what the book really says about two houses. Okay, let's stop making it into a doctrinal position. It's just a fact of what happened. It's not a doctrinal position. Although there are too many groups out there who make it into a doctrinal position. But we're being hinted at that there's going to be a nation. We'll see that to be Judah. And a company of nations. We'll see that to be Ephraim or Israel, the northern kingdom. And so we see these things coming to play through. Let's go now to chapter 48. We're still in Genesis. Chapter 48. And in verse 1. And after these events, it came to be that it was said to Yosef. Now we're dealing, okay, right? We had Abraham to Yitzhak to Yaakov, now to Yosef. Now, when we are dealing with this going through, we got to always remember, again, there's a very important issue of firstborns receiving the inheritances and blessings, and yet we see often the firstborn isn't getting it. Now, Yitzhak gets it. Yaakov is not the firstborn. Esau was. Okay, so we see that playing out. And now we're seeing Joseph. Joseph isn't number one or two or three or four or five or six or seven. I mean, he's way down the list. And so we're going to see Yosef. And so we see how there's intervention and there's a whole plan that's playing forth here. So watch what happens here. He says, and it came to be that it was said to Yosef, see your father sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, Manasseh being the firstborn. And Yaakov was told, see your son Yosef is coming to you. So Yaakov is told his son is coming. And Yisrael strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. And Yaakov said to Yosef, this is Yaakov speaking now, El Shaddai appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And said to me, see, I am making you bear fruit. This is where he saw the ladder, okay? And he said, bear fruit and shall increase you and make you an assembly of peoples and give this land to your seed after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Mitzrayim before I came to you in Mitzrayim, are mine. Now notice he reversed it and put Ephraim first. So we see that he did that on purpose. But notice that there's an ancient Near East process called adoption, like in any other culture. And in this adoption process, he's trying to explain to his son, I am adopting your children as if they're mine. In other words, you don't actually get to decide what happens next. I'm deciding it goes to you, and I'm actually deciding what happens after you. I'm actually going to make those decisions for you. He says, your two who were born in the land of Mitzrayim before I came to you are mine, just as Reuben, just as Shimon, they are mine. Now notice that he picked Reuben and Shimon because who are those? Those are his first two. He's saying, so these are now as if they're my first two. So your two are now as if they're my first two. I'm adopting them as mine. Your offspring whom you shall bring forth after them are yours. Let them be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. So now we're dealing with a whole different inheritance thing. He said, but these two are mine. He says, and I, when I came from Paran, let me just make sure how far I wanted to go with this. 48. Okay, I only wanted to go to verse 5. Okay, so they are mine, he says, okay? Now let's drop to verse 11. And Yisrael said to Yosef, I had not thought to see your face, but see, Elohim has also shown me your seed. Remember, Yaakov, Yisrael did not even think he'd ever see his son again. He thought he was dead. He said, but I get to see your children. He said, so Yosef brought them. And by the way, I think this is on a much deeper level. He says, I'm already seeing the future beyond your children. That's why I'm doing this. He said, I never thought I'd even get to see your face again, but I've gotten to see your seed. And I really believe the Ruach had given him a vision going forward of the seed of the seed of the seed. Which is why he's making sure this gets played out correctly. So that's a sowed level or hidden level. That's a deeper level going on here. So Yosef brought them from between his knees and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Yosef took them both, Ephraim and with his right hand toward Yisrael's left hand and Manasseh with his left hand toward Yisrael's right hand and brought them near. Now, bear in mind, I want you to notice something that you don't see happening here. You don't see the son saying, hey, hold on, these are my kids. You don't get to decide what's going on. What you see is a total respect for authority. There was no doubt that Yaakov was in charge and could do anything he wanted, and Yosef was going to say, yes, Dad, absolutely. Whatever you say, that's you are the ruler of this family. Do we see this today in most families? No. But here's a child who is now told, look, I'm taking your children, and you'll have more, and that's fine. You do whatever you want with them. But these two, these are mine, and I get to tell you what you're going to do with them. They get to have an inheritance. And Yosef's not saying, whoa, 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 time out. Wait, these are my kids. I get to decide. So Yosef still tries a little bit here in verse 13 because he guides the older to the right hand and the younger to the left. Okay? And so he guided Manasseh, okay, was on his left hand toward Israel's right and brought them near. So he's trying to guide them correctly to Israel so that the older was on the right hand. And look what happens. Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left on Manasseh's head, consciously directing his hands, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Yosef and said, the Elohim before whom my fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob walked, the Elohim who has fed me all my life long to this day, the messenger who has redeemed me from all evil, bless these youths and let my name be called upon them and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Yitzchak, and let them increase to a multitude in the midst of the earth. Okay, so hopefully we're seeing what's happening here. So he consciously switches his hands, which goes back to the verse where I said, I believe when he said, I get to see your seed, he actually saw beyond that. He was given the vision and understanding of beyond that. So he knew to switch his hands. He knew what he was doing. He said, and when Yosef saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it was evil in his eyes, and he took hold of his father's hand. And so now we're going to see, hold on, time out. Dad, I think you made a mistake. Now it's not, I don't like what you did. He just thought his father made a mistake. He thought it was something that he, because he's old and maybe he's a little bit dim of vision or something. He thought he made a mistake. He's like, hold on, hold on. And he took a hold of his father's hand to remove it from the head of Ephraim to the head of Manasseh. And Yosef said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. So he's not having a problem with his father doing the blessing or taking control of the situation and all those other things. He just thinks his father made a mistake. He's like, hold on, Dad, I think you messed up. And Yosef said, no, this one's the firstborn. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. See, he had the vision. He saw. He said, he also becomes a people and he is also great. And yet his younger brother is greater than he and his seed is to become the completeness of the nations. The completeness of the nations. The word completeness is translated here from the Hebrew melo, which means fullness or completeness or to become full or complete. So he's saying, look, he and his seed is to become what fills and brings this fullness to the nations. His seed is going to bring fullness to the nations. It's going to be that which fills. And you know, we see this, for example, in Psalm 24, verse 1. You don't have to go there, but in Psalm 24, and verse 1, it says, the earth belongs to Yahweh and all that fills it. That's the same word, melo. All that fills the earth. And so we get a sense of what that means. He says, look, he says, your brother, the younger, his brother is greater than he, and his seed is to become that which fills the nations. Just like it says, all that fills the earth in Psalm 24. He says, and he blessed them on that day, saying, in you, Yisrael, shall bless, saying, Elohim, make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. Then he put Ephraim before Manasseh. So this is why often in the Jewish community and a lot of the Messianic communities, when they say a blessing of the children, they say over the boys, may you be like Ephraim and Manasseh. Because that's what Yaakov said to do. Now, it's not a Torah command. But this is something he said to do. To Yosef, says, look, and you, Israel, shall bless, saying, Elohim, make you as Ephraim and Manasseh. And so this is very important. So we see this stuff going on here. We see that the blessings are being transferred to Joseph for a heartbeat and immediately transferred to Ephraim. To Ephraim. And so this is an important thing. So we're going to see over and over again throughout the rest of the teaching on this that we're going to see Ephraim referred to sometimes, or Israel referred to sometimes, as the same people. When referring to that segment, the nation, they may be called Ephraim, they may be called Israel. We'll see the house of Ephraim or the house of Israel. They are interchangeable. Why? Because he said, I am placing my name. He said, he blessed them, saying, and Israel shall bless you. Verse 16, he says, and let my name be called upon them. So he placed his name on them. So sometimes we see Ephraim also referred to as Israel. Okay. By the way, when he placed his name on them, he didn't automatically change their name to Israel Ephraim. Or, you know, this is like the same thing people do with saying, well, Yeshua came in his father's name, so his father's name has to be somehow physically, literally in his name. Well, he just placed his name on the children. Did both Ephraim and Manasseh change their name now to Israel? Did they stick Israel in the front of their name? Did they make a conjunction there and like Israel dash Manasseh? No, he said they're going to be known by reputation as bearing my authority and bearing my name. And that's what's important that we follow, the connection of that flow through. Okay, now, we have this idea also in trying to understand this fullness, this idea of filling. He says, this is going to happen until, he says, you and his seed is to become the completeness of the nations, of the goyim, of the Gentiles. Let's go, hold your place here, and we'll go to Romans chapter 11. This time we'll turn there. In Romans chapter 11, and in verse 25, in Romans chapter 11, it says, for I do not wish you to be ignorant of this secret, brothers, lest you should be wise in your own estimation, that hardening in part has come over Yisrael, Ephraim, until the completeness of the Gentiles has come in. If you knew your Tanakh, if you knew the promise that was just being discussed here in chapter 48 of Genesis, you would know what Paul is talking about here in Romans 11. What is this idea of the fullness or the completeness of the Gentiles? You know, Christianity would say, well, until all the Gentiles come in, we've got to let the Gentiles come in. But that's not what he's necessarily talking about. He's connecting this moment to what was promised to Ephraim. He said to Ephraim, and yet his younger brother is greater than he, this is Ephraim, and his seed is to become that which fills the nations. And he's saying that also here in chapter 11 and verse 25, he says, Israel, until the filling of the nations has come. And so all Israel shall be saved, as it has been written. Because we're going to find out through this breaking forth that Israel was scattered all amongst the nations. And in going to find and bring them back, you have to spread this message to everyone. And in this way, we also fill the nations with the message and give the nations an opportunity to respond to the message, and the whomsoever wills become part of Ephraim or Israel, a part of the nation of Israel. By choice, they get to choose. And so we're going to see all of this play out. I know we're kind of throwing a whole bunch of things in there, but we see here, though, is this idea of this hardening in part, this hardening. The Greek word there is porosis. So a lot of you have heard of things like osteoporosis, like a hardening of the bones, makes them brittle, osteoporosis. So porosis is this hardness idea, but it also can mean stupidity, callousness, or also blindness or hardness. So he's saying, look, there has been a hardening in part that has come over Israel. There's been foolishness, callousness, blindness that has come over Israel. They've been scattered everywhere. They've forgotten who they are, what their inheritance is, what their heritage is, what their reputation is supposed to be connected with the name they bear. He said, so there's been this, you know, not fully, he says in part. They've been stupid in part, callous in part, blind in part, etc. And so there's all of these things that are going on here. And we see that. We see that today. And hopefully that we'll start to get more of a clarity as we go through this to see the solution to it comes through what? And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free from all the stupidity and callousness and wrong understandings and everything else. Yeshua tells us that in John. And so this process is a beautiful process that we see playing out. But the more we understand what happened in Genesis, then going through the prophets, the more you'll know what was going on in Brit Hadashah. Of course, Christianity doesn't teach it that way. They teach you to read the New Testament and understand everything you can just from that without connecting it to what it's connected to. And so now I hope that you can see that when you read Romans 11:25, your brain immediately goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's what he was saying here in chapter 48 of Genesis. This filling of the Gentiles, the filling of the nations. Remember, Paul knew the word better than any of you and I will ever know it. He was a Bible scholar of scholars. He knew his Tanakh. You know, to be a student of Gamaliel, he had to basically memorize the Tanakh. That's pretty much what he had to know this stuff inside out, backwards and forwards. And he's talking to people and referring to things that they should know as he's instructing them. And you got to believe he's doing the Torah portions every week with them and they're reading these things in Genesis. And so they're also understanding what he's talking about. The problem is when you were going in through the Christianity thing and you were raised in that whole thing, nobody was walking you through the Old Testament on a regular basis where you would have that kind of a connection that the Spirit can make in your mind and in your heart, because that's what the Spirit does. It brings to remembrance, but you can't remember something that isn't there. See, now, if you're studying this out, you go, whoa, 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 I'm reading Romans 11. It talks about the completeness or the fullness of the Gentiles. Oh, whoa, whoa, wait, that's what's going on here with Yaakov talking about Ephraim. That's awesome to see how wonderfully connected everything in your book is. And people say, oh, no, a bunch of men just wrote the book. Really? I don't think men are that smart. I don't think we've ever had men smart enough to write the things that are connected up the way this book is connected up. I mean, that is really, that's beyond my ability to think that any men are that smart. And we're not just talking about men being smart enough. We're talking about men being smart enough in different locations over thousands of years. I don't think so. Just not happening. Okay? That was guided by the Ruach. Let's understand the importance of the birthright. Okay, I want to read a couple of things real quick. We're going to turn a few pages real quickly. Go to Exodus 4, because we're talking about this birthright, and we can see that there was an issue. And by the way, you could do your own research and look it up, and you'll see. But there's a reason why Reuben doesn't get it. There's a reason why Shimon doesn't get it. There are reasons. Now, all of them aren't clear on a lot of the other, you know, like the 8 or 9 in the middle there. But we do see eventually it skips down to Joseph. And by the way, that, I don't have that in my notes here, but you can look this up yourself and understand this. You know why the brothers were jealous? Not because he had a pretty coat. And I know I've taught this before. Some of you have heard this. Some of you may not have heard this. The coat he wore was a coat of many lengths of cloth. It wasn't necessarily all colorful, but it was the coat of authority. It meant this is the one who's getting it all. It's the coat Reuben should have had. Okay, Reuben should have had this coat, and it was given to Yosef. And every day when they saw him in it, they said, our father is putting it in our face that we are not getting this. It's going to that kid. That's what they're thinking. He's getting the authority. He's getting all the inheritance. It's all going to him. That's why they killed him. They didn't kill him because they were jealous. Oh, father loves him more than us. No, he's getting everything, and we're getting nothing. Let's kill the little brat and then it'll go back to Reuben maybe. That's what they were thinking. Okay, remember, Shimon, Levi, and the rest of them were never thinking they were getting it, but they were really close with Reuben. So they thought Reuben's going to take care of us and be good to us and everything. They weren't thinking they were. But then Yosef, really? Skipping over all those other guys? Exodus chapter 4 and in verse 22. We're going to just read a couple of things very quickly here. Shemot 4 and in verse 22 it says, "And you shall say to Pharaoh, thus said Yahweh, Yisrael is my son, my firstborn. Okay, so I say to you, let my son go to serve me. But if you refuse to let him go, see, I am killing your son, your firstborn." So here he's referring to Yisrael as his firstborn. So Yahweh thinks of Yisrael as his firstborn. We know we are to inherit all things. We know Yeshua, also we're going to see verses we talk to Yeshua as being the firstborn of many brothers. Inherits all things. The inheritance goes to the firstborn. But also notice the role of the firstborn is to do what? To come and serve me. He says they're going to come out and they are going to serve me. Verse 22, right? He says, Yeshua is my firstborn. Say, let my son go to serve me. Sons of Elohim do what? They serve Yahweh. You want to be a firstborn? Understand, there's a simple role. We serve our living Elohim. That's what we do. Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 31, verse 7. Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 31, and in verse 7. Okay, Yirmiyahu 31 and in verse 7. "For thus said Yahweh, sing with gladness for Yaakov and shout among the chief of the nations. Cry out, give praise and say, O Yahweh, save your people, the remnant of Israel. See, I am bringing them from the land of the north and shall gather them from the ends of the earth, among them the blind and the lame, those with child and those in labor together, a great assembly returning." Oh, doesn't that sound real familiar? Didn't we hear this about the parats and about gathering them back? He says, with weeping they shall come, and with their prayers I shall bring them. I shall make them walk by rivers of waters and in a straight way in which they do not stumble. For I shall be a father to Israel and Ephraim. He is my firstborn. You see how this is playing out? He says, Ephraim is my firstborn. Now understand, when they're in Egypt, all 12 tribes are together. We're starting to see some separations by the time you get to Jeremiah 31. We already have a two-house split in Jeremiah 31. As a matter of fact, in the promise that you see as far as the renewed covenant or the Brit Chadashah in verse 31, it says, "See, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I shall make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Yehuda." There's your two houses. So already in chapter 31, we know there's two. And so he's referring to, he says, look, Ephraim is my firstborn. What does firstborn mean? We're going to see that Ephraim got the inheritance promises. They weren't to Ephraim. He says, you're my firstborn. And so you're expected to be serving me as firstborns are supposed to do. We also see that, by the way, in the redeeming of the firstborn, where the firstborns who were to serve Yahweh are replaced by the Levites who do what? Serve Yahweh. So you see that play out in the book of Numbers. Continuing, he says, "Hear the word," verse 10, "of Yahweh, O Gentiles, nations, goyim, and declare it in all the isles afar off, and say, he who scattered Israel gathers him and shall guard him as a shepherd his flock." Remember he said, I'm not going to ever leave you until I finished everything I said. And by the way, it doesn't mean I'm going to leave you then. It means you're not going to have any more issues at that point. I will be your Elohim and you will be my people. So when he uses the phrase isles afar off, keep that in mind when you read scripture, that is referring to the scattered lost Israelites. When it talks about those afar off or isles afar off, it's referring to those that are scattered. And he actually says it here. He says, "And declare it to the isles afar off and say, he who scattered is going to guard. And Yahweh shall ransom Yaakov and redeem him from the hand of one stronger than he." There's this redeeming of the firstborn back. I'm going to redeem them. Oh, I don't know. How did he do that? With Yeshua? He redeemed the firstborn back. Because we talk about being redeemed by the blood, redeemed by Yeshua. "And they shall come in and shall sing on the height of Zion and stream to the goodness of Yahweh for grain and for new wine and for oil and for the young of the flock. And their being shall be like the well-watered garden, never languish again." So they're going to come in singing and rejoicing that Yahweh's bringing them back. But notice that they're going to come, listen to this, they're going to come blind and lame and with child and et cetera, in verse 8. By the way, that doesn't mean necessarily physically, spiritually blind, spiritually lame, not knowing what we're doing, not knowing what we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do. And he's going to have to heal the, you know, give eyes to see, ears to hear, give us legs to walk on. See, there's some beautiful connections in all of this. But again, it's talking about the firstborn. Let's go to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 and in verse 28. And we know that all matters work together for the good to those who love Elohim, to those who are called according to his purpose. So called according to his purpose. What purpose does he have in calling people? We have been reading this, and we just read it in Jeremiah, redeeming and bringing back the scattered. Because those whom he knew beforehand, he's talking about those who he knew beforehand, who he also ordained beforehand to be conformed to the likeness of his son, for him to be the firstborn among many brothers. Interesting. So it's not just saying he knew you beforehand, but he's also talking about those who they were called beforehand, meaning the lost Israelites. Now bear in mind, and I said this in earlier parts, it's not about bloodline. But it is on one level. He must call the bloodline people back. And that's why Paul says, what benefit is it to be a Jew? He says, much in every way. But also not if you're not doing what you're supposed to do, because shame on you. You were born into this thing and you're not taking it, you know, you take it for granted. You're not taking it seriously. However, there's no hierarchy in terms of a class system between those who are born and those who choose. You are equal. But the reason you get to hear it is because he promised to bring back those who were born of the bloodline. And in his effort to bring back those who were born of the bloodline, who are not walking around with giant eyes on their head or Israel stamped on them somewhere or Ephraim or something or tattooed somewhere, we don't know who they are. So what do? The message goes out to everyone. And besides, generationally, you're so mixed, we're all mutts. So whether you're 10%, 100%, you know, 1/100%, it doesn't matter. It only avails if you do something with it. But it's not about race or birth, except that he promised to bring them back. So it is about his fulfilling a promise. But in doing so, all of us got to receive the message. So continuing here, what verse am I up to here? All right, 31. So he says, look, no, let's to verse 30. So in whom he ordained beforehand, those he also called. And whom he called, those he also declared right. And whom he declared right, these he also esteemed. But notice that he ordained them beforehand and then he called them. But if they didn't answer the call, he didn't declare them right. They got to answer the call. And then after he declared them right, he also esteemed them or gave them honor. And he says, so what then shall we say to this? If Elohim is for us, who's against us? Let's go to Colossians chapter 1. So we see here Yeshua is the firstborn of many brothers. Colossians chapter 1. And we look at verse 12. Giving thanks to the Father who has made us fit to share in the inheritance of the set apart ones in the light. We get to share in the inheritance. What inheritance? We've been talking about that all through Genesis. All these things are for Israel. And we get to share in the inheritance. Just like when I read the verse, it says, like Yitzchak was, we are children of the promise. Or if you are of Abraham, you are of the seed of Abraham, you're also heirs of the promises. We have that in Galatians 3 or Galatians 4, right? We have that in there. So understand that these things are there about this idea of being an heir, parts of promises, inheritance. It's all talking about what was promised to Israel and how we get to partake and participate in that. He says, giving thanks to the Father who has made us fit. He has made us, what? He's made us fit to share. If you're unfit, you don't get to share. So what does that mean? Oh, now you're talking about works and earning salvation again and blah, blah, blah. No, I'm not. Inheritance is a reward. Rewards are earned. He says in other verses, walk worthily of the Master. What does that mean? What does it mean to be worthy? Worthy of your reward. Worthy of the inheritance. Worthy of the name you're claiming to have on you. Because if you behave in a certain way, you're not going to be worthy of that name, are you? He says here, give thanks to the Father who has made us fit to share. In other words, he has called us, and we have other verses where it says that you were once without Messiah, without Elohim, you were as a Gentile, you're walking in the delusions of your mind, you were doing all those things that we read in Ephesians, right? And so here we are, and he's saying, look, Elohim, the Father, has made you fit, not by waving his hand, by inspiring you to want to be fit, by inspiring you to seek, to ask, to knock, so that you'll learn what it is that pleases. You know, he says to go and seek and understand what is well-pleasing in your Father's sight. And he says, who has delivered us from the authority of darkness and transferred us into the reign of the Son of love, in whom we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, who is the likeness of the invisible Elohim, the firstborn of all creation. So here we are, Yeshua is the firstborn of all creation. What does that mean, firstborn? In other words, he inherits everything. Everything from about creation gets to inherit. He's the firstborn of all creation, because in him were created all that are in the heavens and on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or rulerships or principalities or authorities. All have been created through him and for him, and he is before all, and in him all is held together. Okay, so through him everything's holding together, and he is the head of the body, the assembly, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that he might become the one who is first in all. So here now we're told he's the firstborn from the dead, which means there will be others, but he's the first. It also says that he might be the one who is first in all. So there's no doubt who's the firstborn here. We don't have to worry about saying, well, what about, well, Reuben or this or that? No, he is the firstborn. He's the firstborn. And by the way, as we're going through all of this, there's this, it says here that he is before all, and in him all hold together. Go to an Orthodox Jew, if he'll let you have the conversation with him, and ask him what holds all together. And what's he going to tell you? The Torah. He says the Torah holds all together. And what do we understand about Yeshua? That he's the living, walking, talking Torah. You see? And so that connection is really important. It says that he is before all. Well, what came first? The Word, the Torah. The world exists for Torah to be walked. So Torah came first. He says that he is before all, and in him all hold together. He's the light. He's the truth. He's the word. All of it holds together through him. It's very important. Very important. Verse 19. Because in him all the completeness was well pleased to dwell. So he's filled with the completeness. So let's go back to what the completeness was. The completeness was honesty, simplicity, innocence, upright, honorable, integrity. All of that was completely filled in him. The completeness. Filled in him. And was well pleased to dwell. And through him, to completely restore to favor all unto himself, whether on the earth or in the heavens, have made peace through his blood, as his, the blood of his stake. And you, who were once estranged and enemies in the mind by wicked works, but now he has completely restored to favor. Okay, so you were once estranged because you did wicked works, but now you can keep doing the wicked works, but you're reconciled and redeemed because you believe he exists. Does that make any sense? Why does anybody believe that? He says, you were estranged by what you did, now you're redeemed by what you do, which is you believe, and so you act differently. Remember, belief is an active idea. Abraham by belief, Noah by belief, all of Hebrews chapter 11, by belief they did. You did when you did your wicked things because you had different beliefs. You believe differently, you act differently. It's very simple. So he says, but you were once estranged and enemies in the mind. See, you changed your mind. You changed your citizenship. You changed your actions and your behaviors. The things that estranged you. He says, but now he, Yeshua, has completely restored you. So what's restored you, Yeshua? The light, the truth, the word, the Torah. Yeshua has all of that. Not just one little piece of it, but all of it together has restored you to favor. In the body of his flesh through death to present yourselves, present you set apart and blameless and unreprovable before him. If indeed you continue in the belief, founded and steadfast, and not moved away from the expectation of the good news which you heard, which was proclaimed to every creature under the heavens, of which I, Sheol, became a servant. So listen, he says, if indeed you continue founded and steadfast, so you're going to keep saying, this is it. I believe Yeshua died and was resurrected, and he's the Messiah. That's all you have to do. No, he says, be steadfast in what? No longer walking as an enemy estranged in the mind, doing wicked works. Well, I don't know what wicked works are. That's right, you don't. The word tells you what wicked works are. You in yourself don't know. He defines it for you because you don't know. So now you know. You got the word. You can read. You can study. You can understand. Let's make a note of this. The firstborn birthright was the right to inherit everything. In other words, if you were my firstborn back in those days, so when Abraham is offering to Yitzchak the inheritance, that meant that he got all the flocks, all the lands, all the servants, all the wealth, and everybody in the family, the clan, were now going to have to obey him in sort of a kingly role. The head of the family had full authority like a king. They were a king of their own house, if you understand, like the king of my house. Okay? So that's why you don't see Yosef arguing with Yaakov. Yaakov was the king. But now he was passing that crown onto who was going to be in charge next. And they would get everything. And then whether Reuben or Shimon or Levi or Judah or any of them were going to get anything was now going to be all up to Yosef. And even more so up to Ephraim to decide what they would get. And they had to accept that. There was no choice except to run off on their own and leave. But if they were going to stay, they were going to have to accept that they had nothing. Except to the mercy, benevolence, compassion, and whatever the feelings were of whoever was the one who inherited. All of that was going to be theirs. You know, you see this with Esau with Yaakov, and he sells off his birthright. So then everything is now going to be Yaakov's. Let's go to Revelation 21 and see how this looks. Okay, this is the end of the book. The end of your whole scriptures. It's almost the last chapter. Okay, there's only one more chapter after that. So Revelation 21. And look at what it says in verse 7. It says, the one who overcomes, which by the way sounds painfully active, and not just a mental exercise, but the one who overcomes, listen now, shall inherit all this, and I shall be his Elohim, and he shall be my son. So the inheritance of all this, what's the all this he's talking about? Well, in verse 1, we got a renewed earth and a renewed heaven. The former ones had passed away in the new city, Jerusalem, the new renewed Jerusalem coming down from the heaven. So all of this great stuff is going to be inherited by who? The sons, the firstborns. And of course, it's not just talking about the men, but those who are choosing to be Israel, because Israel, he says, is my firstborn. And those who have Messiah are the firstborn and following. So you want to inherit things? Well, all of this stuff is the inheritance that you're all looking forward to. Why don't you read the end of the book? Anybody do that when you read a book? You don't know how it ends? Well, it ends like this. If you are an overcomer, which is why the teaching we did called To He Who Overcomes is so important, that the overcoming is how you get to inherit all this. The one who overcomes shall inherit all this. The this is what? Everything you're waiting for, the new Jerusalem, the new heavens, the new earth, all of that. So hopefully this has given us a good foundation to see as we're going now forward and watching what's going to happen next. Okay, what's going to happen next? Actually, I think I could squeeze in this one last piece so that we can be in the right place. The splitting of the birthright, we now have a split. Birthrights have, and we'll see this in Genesis 49:10. Go there now because I think we got about 5 minutes I could squeeze this in. Because then we'll go to the splitting of the kingdom next week. So birthrights have actually two aspects of it, authority and inheritance. Normally, both of these things went to the same person. All of the authority and all of the wealth. But what we see happening here is that the inheritance goes to Ephraim, but the authority goes to Judah. In Bereshit 49, Yaakov calls, in verse 1, he calls his sons and gathers together, so he's going to say a prayer and a blessing over them. And in verse 10, we see, the scepter, the authority, shall not depart or turn aside from Yehuda, nor a lawgiver or scholar from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him is the obedience of the peoples. The obedience of nations, of peoples. So we see here that this Yehuda got the scepter and the responsibility for scholarship and preserving of the law. There's authority. Judah was going to have authority in the body. You see this not with every king, although you do see, you know, Shaul, the first king, is a Benjamite, and Judah and Benjamin end up being part of the house of Yehuda, the house of Judah. But then when you see with David, the kingly line is through Judah. And so you have David and Solomon, etc., going down, Shlomo. Okay, this is out of Yehuda. The authority is in Yehuda. But then it has this idea of a lawgiver. The Hebrew actually has an understanding also of being a scholar, or those with the scholarship and responsibility of preserving the information of the law. He says, the scepter shall not depart, and the lawgiver or the scholar or those who understand the law from between his feet. So in other words, we need to respect Judah a little bit more. I know everybody coming into this out of the church are so tired of bashing the church that they want to bash Judah too. Judah's not perfect. But let's remember verse 49, chapter 49 and verse 10 still holds true. Now it says, until Shiloh comes, and to him is the obedience of the people. So some will say, well, Shiloh is Mashiach. Judah agrees with you, by the way. The Jews believe that that's talking about Mashiach. And they'll say, well, he's already come. No, the coming we're talking about is when the obedience of the peoples are there. We don't have that coming yet. So Judah has an authority until Mashiach comes and sits on his throne and has his rod of iron. So we need to look for and find also a respect in our, you know, a certain amount of respect for Judah. Judah preserved. Sure, they put fences around and did these other things with their Talmudic understandings, but they preserved the information. They preserved the law. They showed us what it looks like to walk it out. So the scholarship, and that's where we get the insulting things that I really, it drives me crazy, is people that they know this for 5 minutes, they come out of the church for 5 minutes or 5 years, and then they look at Judah like Judah's a bunch of unstudied idiots that don't know what they're talking about. I'm sorry, but they've been studying this since this. They've been studying this going all the way back. As a matter of fact, if you accept the book of Yashar as having any authority at all, it says that Noach ran a yeshiva and he taught those who were in the lineage that eventually would lead to Judah. And then it said now that it's Judah, Judah's going to always maintain some existence. That's why Judah was never the one that got wiped out completely. And that's why the attempts have always been to wipe them out completely, because there's authority there. And yet we don't have a respect for that. Oh, but you know, they do this and they do that. Yeah, they do a lot of dumb things. Because you know why? Because they're still people. And there's a lot of wicked Jews and bad Jews and crazy Jews and Meshuggah Jews and whatever other Jews you want. Just like there are everything you could say about Italians and Greeks and French and German. Pick anybody and there's good, bad, and ugly in every single one of them. But that doesn't change that somewhere in there, verse 10 still exists. That authority. And by the way, that is part of the mix when we come to all these calendar fights, that it was Judah that gave us the last Sanhedrin, the last decision, that gave us a calendar that was the Hillel the second calendar. And we have to ask ourselves, do we have authority compared to 49:10 in Deuteronomy, where it talks about the authority when you go to the elders to make decisions? Was it Deuteronomy 17? Okay, so I'm not saying that's definitive, but certainly we ought to be considering it. I'm not asking you to go bow down to a Jew and kiss his feet, but let's have a little more respect. Because here we're told that Judah, the scepter, will not turn aside from them until Yeshua comes in full glory and power. That has not happened yet. Let's understand the word says what it says. So what we see here then going on is that we have Judah with the scepter. And then we're going to see that Yosef, that the birthright, the promise of multiplicity, the promise of the land, goes to Joseph Ephraim. Judah gets the scepter, the preeminence, and the Messiah. Messiah comes out of Judah. And so we now have essentially a divided family. We're not going to call it a divided kingdom yet, because that's going to come in the teaching next week. But now we see a family feud sort of starting, because Judah gets authority, but Ephraim gets everything else. So now you've created a problem in the family. There was already jealousies in the family, but now we're creating a problem there. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 5 as our final verse here. Excuse me, 1 Chronicles, 1 Divrei HaYamim, 1 Chronicles chapter 5, and in verse 1. Okay, this is going to give us a little bit of this understanding here. As for the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was the firstborn, but because he profaned his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Yosef, son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to birthright. For Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although the birthright was Yosef's. Okay, we got some things going on here. And by the way, this is what leads to what comes next. That all of the seeds of all of the things, Abba, remember, he sees the end from the beginning, are being laid right here in the passing of the inheritance blessings to one and the authority to the other. This is the seeds of what we're going to see start to happen when we get to David HaMelech and then Shlomo HaMelech, and then we have Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and we're going to see all of this mess, how it all plays out. And there's going to be one verse that's going to be key to it all, and we're going to read that verse next week where it says, "And Yahweh said to them, this split is of me." It had to do with his plan. But the seeds of it were laid right here. This is the birth of that whole splitting of two houses by giving one part of the blessing that normally would have gone all of it to one, giving one part to Ephraim and the other part to Judah. Because Judah was given authority, Ephraim was given everything else. The land and the multiplicity. The scattering, all of those things are now Ephraim. So just keep that all in mind and remember it as we're going to, I'll go through a quick review next week like we've been doing, but that's where we're going to be starting next week, is understanding what is going to be birthed out of these seeds that are being planted right here in this whole little splitting birthright thing. Let's go before the Father. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, Father, we come before you, and it's just so exciting to watch your plan play out and to see your hand in all these things and I can't even imagine if we were there at that time and trying to understand what you had in mind. Now we have the ability to look back through time and see it all play out all the way to Yeshua until now. But to be back there then and not understand and to apply that in our lives today, to realize there's things that you're allowing and doing in our lives today that we don't understand, that we can't see why it's happening. But to look at these things and to realize, just like they needed to trust, we also need to trust. We also need to have full confidence that everything works for the good of those who believe. We read that verse today. We need to believe that we, as firstborn among many brothers, as being in there with Yeshua, as being in there through our choice to be Israel, as being inheritors of the promises, that we also have things in our lives that you are doing that we don't understand, but that will ultimately, if we stay and guard and keep and are steadfast, we'll see in the end the fruit of what you're doing. So Father, we ask that you would strengthen us, continue to encourage us and open our eyes to understand these things as we are sitting just with excitement and with wide open awe, just wide-eyed awe, watching and seeing this all unfold, to see the incredible wisdom and forethought and understanding that you had placed in through these little things that you did by having that little touch here and that little touch there. And so, Father, knowing our human nature, knowing what we would do, and having it all bring forth good fruit ultimately in the end. Father, we thank you, we praise you, we give you all glory and all honor as we are humbled by you and your wisdom and the way you put your word forth. We are truly humbled. In Yeshua's name we come, we seek, we ask, and we knock. It's in his authority, and I just want to praise your holy name. Amen. Amen.